You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
It is Friday. That's why we play this song. That's why we talk football. We're going to even talk hockey. Sabres. Early on in this hour, Paul Hamilton's going to join me. Sabres now 4 in a row. They hadn't won 3 in a row up until they get to 4 in a row this week, right? They don't think they had a 2-game win streak was their highest, right, Dan? Until they got to 3 in a row on the road trip. And now they've backed it up with another win to get to 4 in a row. So there you go.
Yeah.
Pretty nice. Pretty nice night last night. How about last night? Sabres get the win against the Flyers, the first game of the Jarmo Kekalainen era. No more jinx from Jeremy. They must win, and they did. So they get that win, 5-3. Nice game for the Sabres. Some nifty, pretty goals, by the way, along the way in that game. Yeah, they're still climbing out. They're still tied for last, I think, in the standings. Either way, I try not to look at the standings now. Just keep winning. Keep winning, and then, like, in a week from now, week and a half, take a look at where you are, right? So, that happened. And there was a really, a really amazing NFL game last night. Seahawks and Rams. Holy cow, if you didn't see this game, it was wild. Game of the year, maybe. I mean, maybe the Bills-Ravens game to start the year was the game of the year. There's been a few really amazing games along the way. But this one, last night, had some crazy stuff happen, and I wanted to kind of touch on one of the main points of the game. today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, the two-point conversion, if you haven't seen it. Plus a few other kind of odds and ends going on. Playoff seeding, had a big debate on that on social media this week. It's still going. I appreciate all of you who have come in on that. So we'll talk all about it today as we head towards Sean McDermott just about maybe a little over an hour from now on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. Good to be with you on a Buffalo Football Friday. Football Friday on WGR is brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino. Call the 8s and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Crosby's hometown fuel. Game day ready since 1922. We will hear from Bills head coach Sean McDermott in the 11 a.m. hour. We will hear from WGRZ TV2 chief meteorologist Patrick Hammer at 11:30 a.m. or right after Sean McDermott, right around that time. And we'll get a weather update for Cleveland. Been monitoring it all week. Doesn't look great. Not like the worst weather. I think much colder for Cleveland, Chicago last week. A little windy, but we'll get exactly what the weather forecast looks like for Cleveland on Sunday. Bills, Browns, Sunday at 1 p.m. And of course, when Sean McDermott joins me, it's going to be a lot about the injury report and how that looks this week because, man, it just seems like every single week there's more and more and another layer on top of guys getting either injured at practice or being held out of practice, managing things during practice days where we find out later that they are not practicing when we thought they were, or they go from a full to a limited, and then did something happen, or a limited to a DNP. So we'll figure all that out with Sean McDermott, because right now, on the Bills injury report this week, as though it was actually trending really well, like last week and even into this week, on the injury report, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 names. Now, we're going to parse them. We'll talk about them. But out of those 12 names, three of them were not on Wednesday on an estimated basis for a Wednesday walkthrough that did appear on Thursday, which means something may have happened during Thursday's practice. We don't know. So maybe Sean McDermott will be able to shed some light on that. We'll ask him about that. Those are three of them. It's Cam Lewis, versatile defensive back. Chase Lunt, a backup offensive lineman who hasn't played yet. And punter Mitch Wishnowski, which is an issue because the Bills are already without their kicker, Matt Prater, this week. We know that. Then you also had two guys, Taron Johnson and Daquan Jones, on the defensive side, go from a estimated full participant on Wednesday to limited on Thursday. Again, did something happen at practice where they were, you know, they did something to not finish practice or something that's concerning for Sunday? We'll get to all that. The good news is, Christian Benford, 2 days in a row, both limited, but 2 days in a row of practice. That's good and trending right. Terrell Bernard going from limited to full, which is an interesting decision coming up if Terrell Bernard's able to play, what they do at middle linebacker, considering how well Shaq Thompson has played. And then you have Mecole Hardman, who could be joining in the fray here at wide receiver slash return, although the Bills do have a couple more weeks if they don't want to do it this week and hold off on that roster decision. If he's ready to play and they want to put him on the field this week, take a little bit of off Khalil Shakir, help out in the return game. The Bills do not have good numbers in the punt return game. He would help there. They have very good numbers in the kick return game. Ray Davis, we'll talk about him later today. I'll ask Sean McDermott a little bit about him and kind of the role he's been playing here, which is really nice to see. He now leads the NFL in kick return average, yards per kick return. But Mecole Hardman coming back into the mix here, hopefully he can stay healthy because he can help in that regard. Punt returns especially, right? And even kick returns. We'll open up the phone lines, 803-0550, if you want to jump in and jump on board. And really kind of talk about anything to start the show here, including the Sabres. We'll get with Paul Hamilton in a moment. And the Bills. And what's happening Sunday in Cleveland. And what the standings look like for this team. The Bills can clinch a playoff spot this week, folks. They can clinch a playoff spot this week. They cannot clinch the division, of course. But neither can the New England Patriots. They can't clinch the division either, no matter what happens this week. And that's obviously good news. We'll see what happens with their game Sunday night at the Ravens, it might not really matter all that much, except for the fact that maybe if they do lose to the Ravens, the Bills could still lose a game to the Eagles, and be mathematically alive for the division. But going into this week, here's how the Bills can clinch a playoff spot. They can, if they win, the Bills would have to win, and have either the Colts lose or tie, or the Texans lose or tie. These are all very, very realistic scenarios, by the way. Now, I shouldn't say as much realistic maybe for the Texans, because the Texans are actually playing the Raiders, I believe, right? Let me go and get that. Yeah, Texans-Raiders. I don't expect the Texans to lose to the Raiders, so most likely not going to happen there. But the Bills can certainly beat the Browns. We know that. And the Colts are the other team, and the Colts are home to the Niners. And the Bills, and that's a Sunday night game, by the way. Bills win. If the Bills win Sunday at 1 p.m., they can clinch the playoff spot later in the day. If the Texans lose their 4:25 p.m. game, unlikely but possible, it's the NFL, or later that night if the Colts lose to the Niners. You'd love the Texans to lose and get it over with, because if that happens, you might want to root for the Colts, folks. And the reason I say that is, I think most Bills fans would agree you don't want to see the Texans in the playoffs. It's a tough matchup for the Bills. We saw that happen, that Thursday night game, the way their defense plays, the way they can get after the quarterback. And right now, they're a game up on the Indianapolis Colts. And they do play each other in Week 18. So let's just play the scenario out for a second. Bills win, Colts lose. Bills in the playoffs, that's great. Texans. Bills win, Texans lose. Bills get in the playoffs, that's great. Now you might want the Colts to actually win, because I think you're comfortable in your playoff spot for the Bills. You know you're there. And maybe now you can get the Colts to pass the Texans and actually have a chance to keep them out of it. I think that's a very realistic rooting possibility for the Buffalo Bills. 803-0550. I want to get into last night's game and the two-point conversion, how that went down, and plus some other things about that game and what it says about the league and the teams and playoff seedings and all of that. So we'll do that here today on the Nordtown Automotive Extra Point Show. In the meantime, Sabres with their fourth win in a row last night. They had not won two in a row until they went out west, dropped three, and then, oh yeah, by the way, won three in a row to finish their West Coast trip. They fired their GM despite that, which means it was already in motion before that. Kevin Adams, Jarmo Kekalainen comes in, and in the first game under his new regime, they beat the Philadelphia Flyers last night in Buffalo 5-3. And joining us on the Western Hotline right now is our guy Paul Hamilton, brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda, relax, we got this. Well, Paul, I mean, the team, after not having even three wins in a row, gets their fourth win in a row. What has been the difference in the Buffalo Sabres over this four-game winning streak that you've seen?
Well, a lot of it you can boil down to the last 2 minutes of the hockey game last night, when Buffalo wound up shooting the puck over the glass.
Mm-hmm.
So they were shorthanded. And for the last minute and a half of the power play, it was a 6-on-4 because the Flyers pulled Ersson. And what you saw was desperation. I mean, Alex Lyon said after the game he didn't have to make a save through that whole minute and a half. Why? Because we saw four block shots. Alex Tuch, Kesselring block two, Owen Power. People selling out to try to win a hockey game, you know, when it looks like, this again, it's a 6-on-4, Flyers tie. Now it's going to be overtime, and we're going to give the Flyers a point when the Sabres should get two and they should get none. But that kind of shows us what we've seen lately. Like, look at the 2-1 win in Seattle. They protected that 2-1 lead from about the middle of the second period on until they got the empty netter, and did it without turning the puck over, without forcing Alex Lyon to stand on his head. You know, they just were calm in the way they played the game. They were great with their puck possession. And that improved greatly as this game went on. Because, Sal, you've heard me say this how many times, that whatever the reason is, and I don't know why, East Coast teams typically that go out west for a long time play a very poor first game back. And Buffalo was on their way to that.
Yep.
Their first period was horrendous. They were giving the puck away the whole period. Lyon was standing on his head. But this was a little bit different because it was only for half the game. And they figured it out. And how many times did you hear Don Granato say and Lindy Ruff say that good teams don't always have their A game, but when they don't, they figure out a way to win? Well, the shot attempts, did you realize the shot attempts in the first period were 27-6?
I saw that stat on the screen. I saw that stat. I think it was like 24-3 at one point when I saw it, but you're right. It was incredible.
After that, for the last 40 minutes, it was 48-30 in favor of the Sabres.
Wow.
You know, they figured it out. They got their second win. They scored two goals late in the second period to take the lead, and Buffalo's best players became their best players again. And that's been key in this, too, because they've been hot. I mean, Tage Thompson, really, for the first half of the game, it might have been the worst I'd seen him all year. I mean, John Tortorella ripped him apart on the one goal by Cates. You know, how he, you know, was in great position on the wall and then allowed Bobby Brink, who's 5'8", to just come off the wall. And he just was not playing well. But Tage Thompson can do that. And it all started with Rasmus Dahlin forcing the turnover on the wall, cutting to the middle, makes a great pass between his legs backwards to Thompson. And Thompson, this is what goal scorers do. He just changed the angle on Ersson a little bit. He didn't just rip it. He froze Sanheim, and then he went to his right just a step and then released the puck. It changed the angle on Ersson, and he was, you know, with the kind of shot Thompson has, he put it in, and now he has scored goals in five consecutive games, and that's what I'm talking about. Your best players are starting to come through. For Dahlin, you know, he has 2 goals and 8 assists in his last 8 games. Alex Tuck, he starts the next goal. He starts it up. Then Oslin scores. Alex Tuck also has been getting on the scoreboard on a regular basis. And he has points now in 7 out of 8 games. 3 goals, 5 assists for 8 points. Norris in the third period. What a goal that was. I mean, he's all alone. And he got a pass from Benson, and he made it look to Ersson like he was going to go back to Benson. He put a little fake on him. Well, that opened up the pads, and he was done. And I asked Norris after the game, I said, were you faking that pass on purpose? He goes, I'm just going to be honest with you. I have no idea. He goes, it just happened.
Paul, those hands, though, those hands that he showed on that goal, and just a kind of sly move just as the goalie opened his pads. That guy is an elite talent with the puck in his hands.
Yeah, and Norris has points in every game since he's been back from injury. So I've been pounding on that for a while, that this year one of the reasons the Sabres are where they are is because their best players have not been their best players enough. And in this little streak now, even before when they lost those 3 games on the road, their best players were not playing well. But they're starting to get a production that they need out of those guys. Those guys have to be the leaders. Kekalainen was talking about that in his press conference, that he needs those leaders to be leaders and show the team the way. And even though they didn't play well in the beginning of the game, the leaders showed the team the way to get out of it. Play a good midway through this third period. The Sabres had a 7-1 shots advantage.
Yeah.
Scored pretty quick after the midway point on the Norris goal. Even though it got close, they killed off the 6-on-4. Samuelson actually came out of the penalty box and made a nice play to McLeod to get the empty net goal. So, you know, they're doing the things to it. And it finally, and look at what it took just to get past one team in the Eastern Conference. They're not in the cellar anymore. They have passed the Columbus Blue Jackets. But they had to go on a 4-game winning streak and go on a 10-6 record. In 16 games, that's .625 hockey. That's a good record. But it took a 10-6 record. It took 16 games for the Sabres to get past one team in the Eastern Conference. And that's it's what I've been talking about through most of this 14-year streak, except for 1 year. That it's not – if they're in ninth place and 7 points behind, they're fine. You can make up 7 points on a team fairly easily. But just because they're 4 points out or 5 points out, it's the seven teams they got to leapfrog to get over. Are seven teams going to go down the drain for you? I mean, it's a hard thing to do. And it just – it shows you how hard it is, Sal. They needed 16 games to play good hockey just to get past one team.
Well, two of those teams that are in their way, the Islanders are actually in a playoff spot right now. They play. And then the next night, they play the Devils. Obviously, those two teams are in playoff spots right now, but these are games against Eastern Conference teams, and you just got to keep winning, and we'll see what happens. That's tomorrow night, by the way. Sabres take on the Islanders. Tomorrow afternoon, I should say. It's a 5 p.m. start down at KeyBank Center. All right, Paul, there was a lot of stuff, I guess, circulating around Lindy Ruff's future. You've had a few days to digest everything you've heard from everybody in the organization. Where do you think that stands right now?
Well, I mean, Kekalainen just told Lindy Ruff, keep doing what you're doing. I mean, he has a lot of respect for Lindy Ruff. And I don't think at this point he's looking at making a change. That doesn't mean 2 weeks from now, 2 months from now, or whatever, if things really start going poorly, that might not change. You don't know. But I got the distinct impression, and Ruff said he had talked to, after the move was decided upon, about Kevin Adams. Ruff, of course, was not part of that decision. He said Terry Pegula never discussed his job or anything else with him about it. And Kekalainen, all he said to him was, you know, keep doing what you're doing. I mean, so right now, I think the way things are going, I don't think that he is inclined to make a change in the coaching position, but you never know.
Oh, Paul, I'm sorry, Paul, did you stop there? I lost you for one second.
Yes.
There, buddy. Okay,
yeah.
Great. I thought my headphones come out, but I appreciate it. All right, yeah. Paul, the other thing I want to get to on this, I mentioned Lindy Ruff. I want to play Rasmus Dahlin's comments from the locker room, and I just want to ask you if you thought anything about this, because it's made a little bit of traction here that maybe he was, I guess, for the change, or however you want to say it. But anyway, this is Rasmus Dahlin in the locker room. You were there, I'm sure, when he was asked about Jarmo Kekalainen being hired and Kevin Adams being fired. Go ahead.
Yep. Excited. Turning a new page. Looking forward for the future.
Okay, so I bring it up because typically you hear people say, you know, we didn't get the job done. What did Lindy Ruff say? I cost my general manager the job. I feel like I let him down. Here's the captain of the team using the word excited, looking forward to the future. Is he just saying that to be positive, or do you think there was friction in what his thoughts were about Adams and feeling there was a change needed?
I think part of it, he's pretty good at English, but he hasn't 100% mastered it yet. I think that's part of it. I think he's trying to be positive, that he's excited about what he heard from Kekalainen, because he elaborated later. He also talked about Adams later. He also talked about that it's on the players. He actually talked about it for a while. That he goes, the GMs can only do so much. He goes, this is on us. We're the ones playing the game. We're the ones that cost people their jobs and that they weren't, and it's not good enough. So, you know, as the interview went on, he went on. And there are other times that he's talking that I think to myself, it's just he's searching for words and doesn't necessarily find the words he wants at the time. I think that's what that was. I didn't take it as friction. I took it as because, Jarmo came into the locker room, told them that he believes in this team, but he also told them that, you know, when they're playing teams that they're better than and that the effort isn't put forth, that's absolutely unacceptable. And that's the standard that excites Dahlin. He wants to see that standard adhered to, and I think he wants to see more of it and probably wants to see more accountability when it happens. So I think that's what he was talking about.
Paul Hamilton on the West Hur Hotline. Sabres in action again tomorrow afternoon, evening, against the New York Islanders. Part of a doubleheader weekend here. They'll have the Devils in town on Sunday as well. All right, so that being said, and by the way, at the Devils, I'm sorry, they'll be in New Jersey. My Paul.
Right.
They'll be in New Jersey on Sunday at 7 p.m. All right, So there was, I think it was Elliot Friedman this morning, or someone, I'd heard a clip, him talking about the Edmonton Oilers possibly being interested in Alex Lyon. Whether or not that's true specifically or not, I think it underscores what we heard from Kekalainen earlier in the week, Paul. They do not want to continue with the three-goalie situation. Ellis appears to be getting healthier here. What happens with this situation? And also, can you give us the timeline on the roster freeze now everything has to go down?
Roster freeze, 11:59 tonight, right before midnight. And it goes through the 28th. No trades, no waivers at that point, unless it's an emergency waiver or something like that. That has been going around for a while. That's actually an old rumor, and Edmonton has made their goalie trade.
Well, I think it's because now Jarry's hurt.
Well, okay. I didn't realize Jarry got hurt.
Yeah, Jarry's hurt. I'm sorry. So Jarry's hurt, and we don't know this extent of it, but he got hurt yesterday, apparently.
Okay.
So I think that's where this is the genesis was. If they made their trade, they did a lot of research on him. And again, I know that I'm sorry for putting you in this position. This is what Elliot Friedman said.
I was at the game last night, so I haven't caught up.
So
with
just
that
so you know, and he said Edmonton had done a lot of research on Lyon, and he wouldn't be surprised if they make a call to the Sabres about him.
Right, and that was the rumor a long time ago. The Winnipeg, I think, could definitely need to upgrade their backup. Eric Comrie's not it, and he proved it why Hellebuck was out. I was very surprised that Winnipeg didn't make a move at Lyon, when Hellebuck was out, because they kind of took him out of the race for a bit, and we'll see if Hellebuck can get them back into it. If it were me, I would actually entertain offers for all three. And, whatever I felt the best offer was, I probably would go with to try to alleviate this situation. Now, Lyon has been given this opportunity. Now, with the back-to-back, yeah, you probably could play him back-to-back if you so choose. That would be three games in four. So I would doubt it. And if it's me, Luukkonen goes Saturday. Why? At home, he's 4-1 with a 1.97 and a .921 save percentage. On the road, he's 0-4-1 with a 3.97 and 8.43. Lyon is consistent no matter where he plays. So I would rather, if they're both going to play, I would rather Lyon play in New Jersey and Luukkonen get the road or the home game, because he's just been very, very good playing at home, and he has not been good at all playing on the road.
Any other injury updates? We know Timmins now is out, right? That's a tough loss for the Sabres after last night.
6 to 8 weeks with a broken leg. It's too bad for him. That's another thing about the 6-on-4. Their best two penalty killers on defense, one was in the penalty box and one was injured with a broken leg. So they didn't have their best two defensemen killing that 6-on-4. So that was another thing that made that good. But they'll miss his penalty killing. He is a shot-blocking machine on the penalty kill. He doesn't make the errors penalty killing that he makes 5-on-5. He tends to get his puck management 5-on-5 does not tend to be all that good. But when he's killing a penalty, he's really, really good.
Yeah.
So they definitely are going to miss him on the penalty kill.
Paul, is there any update on Jiří Kulík?
He was just, I noticed him in a skate the other day, just leaning over the boards with a stick, passing it. He's around, but he's not on the ice with the team or not on the rehab skates or anything like that. So, and that's one of those you just don't know. I think you just keep testing the guy and see how he's doing, with the clots and everything. You don't know how his body's going to react, when it's going to be better, where he can continue his career. I'm not at all saying this is going to happen with Jiří Kulík, but these kind of things have ended careers before.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any thought that that's happening with Jiří Kulík. Lindy Ruff even said he expects him back at some point, It's just impossible to put a timeline on this type of a thing, because you just don't know when the clot is going to get to a point where he can start and continue his career.
Saturday matinee game, 5 p.m. tomorrow.
5 o'clock.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know if I call that a night game or an afternoon game. I'm always confused with that.
I know, right?
Do I say this afternoon or do I say tonight?
I think it's afternoon. I officially am declaring 5 o'clock still in the afternoon, right? I mean, it's 5 o'clock somewhere is the saying when it's Monday through Friday, because you go in the afternoon to have a beer after work, right? I mean, that's what people say. So I'm going to say officially, but I think as the game goes on, it's the evening game. It's this evening at the arena, because by the time it's over, it's 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, so yeah, I think for a while you're going to call it evening, and then for maybe the third period, you're going to call it night.
There you go.
I don't know.
You could do that as well. And then, of course, Sunday, Sabres at the Devils. All right, four-game winning streak for the Sabres, and Paul Hamilton's all over it. At PHAM1717 and WGR550.com. Paul, thanks a lot, buddy. Have a great weekend, my man.
Well, by the way, enjoy Cleveland. Back when I was covering the Bills, I was at that blizzard.
Ooh,
luckily,
you
when
were.
I checked out of my hotel, okay. I asked, can I stay tonight? And they go, yes, you can. So I went back from the stadium to the hotel. I believe it was Mark Gaughan tried to drive home. If I'm not mistaken, it took him 8 hours to drive home from Cleveland. I decided I'm not dealing with that, and the sun was out in the morning when I drove home from Buffalo.
Oh, I can imagine.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second, and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands, or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
Tell you, go ahead.
And briefly, also, the press box windows froze. We could not see the game.
That's
we
amazing.
Were watching the game on the monitors because they couldn't get the ice off the glass. It just kept forming, and we couldn't see the field.
I mean, it was – and then the snap goes over the punter's head. It's a low-scoring game, of course. I think there's a story about the team coming back that I've heard before and them also having issues, no doubt, because of the weather. That was, what, 2009?
Yeah, they came back next morning, too. I passed their buses.
Yes.
I was driving back, and they were on buses.
Yes.
And I passed their buses the next morning. They stayed, too.
Was that 2000? No, it wasn't 9.
I don't remember the year. I'm horrible with remembering
years. Boy. It wasn't 9. I'm going to get maybe 8. I have to go back. 2007, I bet you it was. I'm going to go back
and
look
right now.
That was
back when Chris Brown left. and I was covering both teams.
December 16th of 2007 was the game. All right, now we're going to go back even a couple decades before that. My first ever Bills road game was I was a high school student, and my dad drove me and a couple friends to the 89 playoff game, the infamous Ronnie Harmon drop. I was at that game. How about that?
Well, I don't think you're going to have these problems this Sunday. I don't know if you're going to have people dropping touchdowns or in such a blizzard that even standing on the sideline, you might not have been able to see the action. It was so bad that day.
I can't wait to talk to Chris and Eric about that game. Eric wouldn't know necessarily. He wasn't on the team yet, but Chris definitely will. All right, Paul. Well, guess what? We'll be thinking about you and your nice warm arenas that you're in on Saturday and Sunday. I say that in jest because I know hockey arenas can be very cold as well. Thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate it.
Take care. Have a good one.
All right, you got it. Paul Hamilton right there. We'll take a timeout. Okay, when I get back. Ray, I got you, buddy. I'm going to have you up first here, and the phone lines are open after that. 803-0550 and your Bills-Browns memories. And this is a rivalry, quote-unquote rivalry. It's a series that goes back a long way. There's been some really interesting bad games and really good games as well. You want to share those? I have a few of mine that I want to share along the way as well here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday on WGR.
No, I haven't thought about it. I do like highlight tapes, but I don't like being a part of other people's highlight tapes. I mean, he's an absolutely tremendous football player. He's one of the greatest of all times. And yeah, I mean, he's a force to be reckoned with. And we got to be ready for everything that they can throw at us. But you have to be aware of where 95's at all times.
Josh Allen said he hasn't thought about Myles Garrett getting the sack record against him. I guess that's a good thing if he hasn't thought about it. Hasn't crossed his mind at all. I mean, Garrett's a sack and a half away. You're not thinking about, oh my gosh, this guy going to get me a couple times during the game, right? I can believe that part of it for sure. But they know who Myles Garrett is, and I'm sure they're aware that he's chasing a record in some capacity. He is 1.5 sacks shy of the all-time record. He has 21. The all-time record is 22. So he's a sack shy of tying it. And getting to 22.5 would break the all-time record. And that was Michael Strahan. I remember when that happened. That was taking a dive by Brett Favre, essentially, but that was in the last game of the year. I would not expect Josh Allen to do anything like that to give Myles Garrett the record. You don't want to be on other people's highlight tapes, he says. Getting posterized, as the kids say. But if Myles Garrett does get the record against the Bills, of course, you'll see that everywhere, but he has a couple more games to advance that record, and the new record, would keep to continue. So the next sack will be the record after that. Think of it that way. Let's go to Ray and Clarence. Thanks for holding, Ray. I appreciate that. You're on WGR.
Oh, my pleasure. In fact, I forgot I was even on hold. I thought I was just listening to you and Paul.
Well, there you go. Hopefully that's good radio then.
You know, I have a couple thoughts and a question that I've just been mulling over in my head. I'm so glad that the Chiefs have not made the play or not making the playoffs this year, let alone the Super Bowl. I still take pride in the Bills 4 Super Bowls in a row. And anytime somebody comes close, I'm just glad it's over. You know, the Chiefs can still not tie or still have that lead. I'm also grateful for, like many people have probably said, I'm glad we re-signed Cook in, before the season, because imagine if we had to re-up him now, you know, the value probably would have gone up $3-4 million.
100%.
And then, you know, lastly, to call me crazy, but if we're going to get the 5 seed, I am hoping that Houston gets in as the 7th seed. And I know a lot's got to happen. And here's my thinking. I want to host the AFC Championship game if we're not going to get that 1 seed, but you need one of those 6 or 7 seed teams to win. And I think Houston is the only team that I feel confident, at least at this point, saying that they could win 2 road games, which would, and I hate to play them in the championship game, but if it means having a home game, I'm willing to do that than go 3 on the road. What do you think about that?
I don't think you're crazy at all. I just had some interaction with some people yesterday about this, which is, would you rather go to Pittsburgh or play X team, even Houston, at home? And some said, I'd rather play at home no matter what. It doesn't matter who the opponent is. So if you're talking AFC Championship game at home, of course, right? I don't think you're crazy at all. Get Houston in because they can knock off teams to give you that possibility.
Correct.
Is certainly one. We couldn't know the prediction and how it plays out. But I don't think you're crazy to think about that. I think if the Texans came to Buffalo in round one, round two, or in the AFC Championship, the Bills are favored. The Bills are going to be favored in that game.
That's why I wanted Kansas City. I wanted Kansas City in as the seventh seed if Houston wasn't going to do it, because I felt like they were another team that could do it.
See, now there, now that's an interesting one, and I think you're right about that. But man, the ghosts of Chiefs past would just be too tough to bear. Maybe, you know what I mean?
Have a good day, Phil.
You got it, Ray. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. That's, I don't think he's crazy to think about that. By the way, I made a mistake. The NFL record is 22.5 by Michael Strahan. My apologies. And right now, I was a half sack off that. Myles Garrett at 21.5. So Garrett would need one. He still would need one, though, to tie the record. He would need 1.5 to break the record. And then every sack he has after that subsequently breaks the record, right? So, you know, you could have every one of those on highlight films and reels and tapes. Okay. Dan Dale's my producer. Dan, do you know who Terry McAuley is, right? You know who Terry McAuley is? Who is Terry McAuley? You heard him last night.
He is the almighty ref guy who comes in and gives his thoughts of, it may be this.
Okay, he's the rules analyst for Thursday Night Football, right?
Right.
The rules analyst for Thursday Night Football, Terry McAuley. Actually thought he did a really good job yesterday on the explanation of the two-point play. But I just had Terry McAuley just quote tweeted me on Twitter. I just want you to know that. Because I quote tweeted him and he quote tweeted me. Nothing bad. It was good. It was good interaction here. So there's a big debate about last night's play. In case you haven't seen it, here's what happened in last night's play. I think this is a fascinating topic and debate, actually. If you love football and you've played football, you've been around football, I think it really heightens the debate about it, which is there was a two-point play by the Seahawks last night. They were trying to tie the game. Okay? They lateral the ball. They throw a screen, a tunnel screen. It gets knocked down and rolls into the end zone, incomplete. Everybody runs off the field. Okay, we didn't get the two-point conversion. Okay? All of a sudden, Terry McAuley comes on our screen and goes, wait a minute, just so everybody knows, this was actually a backward pass. It went lateral down the line, which means it's backward. It was backward. Lateral is backward. And because of that, it actually counts as a fumble. So just so everybody knows the regular rules on this, any pass that goes backward is not a pass credited to the quarterback. It is a run credited to the running back who catches it or wide receiver. It's a run. It's a run play. It's just like a pitch. There's no difference between a pass backward overhand or a toss sweep. So if you see Josh Allen throw the ball backward to Khalil Shakir, Khalil Shakir actually gets a running play stat out of it, okay, if that makes sense for everybody. So it's a backward pass, all right? So, anyway, that being said, the point is that is a fumble when it goes backward and it's not caught because it's a running play. He says, hey, this is actually backward, so that's a fumble. Well, everybody ran off the field except Zach Charbonnet, I believe it was, right? Because the ball was laying in the end zone, just innocuously picked it up. So they gave him 2 points. They tied the game. Here's the problem. The whistle had already blown. But here's the other problem. The rule actually allows that to happen. So Terry McAuley is explaining this to people today on X, which is, hey, this has been the rule for a while now. And I remember that when this became a rule. I've never been for this rule, by the way. And this is why we had a back and forth. That if the whistle blows and it's a continuation to pick up a fumble, and then they realize the whistle shouldn't have blown, they allow the fumble recovery. I think that's crap, to be honest with you. And here's why. Shouldn't have used that word, but you know what I mean. I think that should not be the reason why. That should not be the rule. And here's why. Folks, a basic tenor of football, and all sports really, but especially a violent game like football where you have collisions and people hitting each other, you can't play past the whistle. You can't. You can't teach kids that. We don't teach kids this at the lowest of levels. You don't teach them to play past the whistle. You teach them to play to the whistle, and that is it. You know why? And I use kids as an example, because as they get older, can you imagine saying, no, you can go past the whistle. Yeah, it's still a fumble. Go jack the guy up. Dude's standing around. That is a basic tenet of football. You play until the whistle blows, and that is it. So that said, how can you allow a play to happen after the whistle's blown? I understand the concept. I understand why. I understand they get it wrong. We see it in hockey all the time. How many times do we see a hockey goal where they go, sorry, it probably should have counted, but we blew the whistle. Do you know why they don't allow it? Because once the whistle blows, people are taught to stop in sports. It is Pavlov's dog. What is that, right? dog, here's something, right? The bell, the whistle, you know, the whole thing. They're trained. You are trained as an athlete to stop at the whistle. Basketball, hockey, football, anything with a whistle, you stop. You know why? Because it's dangerous not to do that. It was wild last night. I'm in the moment going, oh my God, like this is crazy. I can't believe this. But honestly, it's a stupid rule. What are we doing? We're allowing plays to happen after the whistle has blown. So my response to Terry McCauley was this whole thing. It's a basic concept we teach kids at the youngest of levels. Playing to the whistle, not after. Football's a violent game. Allowing plays to extend after the whistle is dangerous, both physically and as a precedent. So he then quote tweeted me, Terry McCauley, and he said, the competition committee considered this many years ago when the replay rules added for fumble backward pass recoveries during the immediate continuing action. They've shown no inclination to reevaluate, and I'm certain it will not change. FYI, the college rule is the same. I don't care. The rule's dumb. They should reevaluate. We're teaching the wrong things. It's sports. You can't tell people it's okay to play past the whistle and then give penalties for people doing things past the whistle. How is that possible? It's okay to recover a fumble past the whistle. It's not okay to jack a dude up after the whistle. Does that make sense to you? It doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry. I don't get it. I know. Inadvertent whistles, it sucks. It could hurt your team. It happens all the time. That's sports. I don't like it. Maybe your thoughts on that. 803-0550, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday.
All right, good stuff. I appreciate the people who've also chimed in on X at Sal Sports. Getting connected with our fans is brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Let's go down to Nashville. Gary is up next. Hi, Gary. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. Good morning from down here.
Good morning.
I just wanted to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Actually, a couple different things, as long as we're talking about officiating.
Yep.
And something I wanted to call in a couple weeks ago about. But if you recall, and we're talking about the whistle, playing to the whistle, it was a Sunday night game or a Monday night game against Brady. And the Bills were the beneficiary, if you will, of a dead ball. Well, it was a whistle. Brady had passed, I think, Julian Edelman. It was like a 35-yard gain. But it was called back because the whistle had blown before that. So this whole situation, which occurred last night, brought up that same type of an individual type of refereeing perception, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Being consistent is a huge thing, and playing to the whistle is very, very apparent.
Well, here's the issue I have. That your point is right, which is you can't allow some things after the whistle and not other things. The whistle should be the end-all, be-all to every play to me.
Correct. And which brought up another thing, as long as we're talking about officiating. So I come up, I still have my season tickets from 88 and get up for about four or five games. And it was the Cincinnati game. And it was pretty blatant. But I want to talk to you about how it's viewed from officiating crew to officiating crew.
Mm-hmm.
Is the tackle moving with his leg on an outside position, moving back on a pass play, and it's not being called consistently.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's something that you've seen.
Yes, for sure. I think it was the Chiefs tackle a couple of years ago that was doing this all the time, right?
But this happened to be the Cincinnati game,
Yeah, but I mean, like, this is happening a lot in football that people are noticing, and I guess I don't have a good answer for you, Gary, other than I think they basically allowed, as long as that ball starts to move and that tackle is moving right at that simultaneous time, we don't see the whistle, but we do see it sometimes where they start to move a little before, and it should be a whistle, but they don't. And I don't really know if there's a rhyme or reason behind that other than everything going so fast, they just don't throw it. You know what I mean?
Understand. But, you know,
it should be thrown. Exactly. But you're still not allowed to move early, period.
Right. Yeah. Right. So with that, I'll leave you. And
thank you, Gary. Yeah. Merry Christmas to you, too. Thanks for the kind words. I appreciate it. I mean, yes.
We all know officiating makes mistakes. We all know officiating is, at times, we look at it and go, it's the worst it's ever been. All these sports, for whatever reasons, make full-time officials. They don't get enough practice. All these different reasons. I'm all for getting calls right. I've never been really hammering against replay. I hate the way, how long it takes. I hate the process of it sometimes. I don't think there's a right, necessary, or wrong way to always exactly do it, because there's always different things that come up. I would always say, though, that in sports, coaches and players make mistakes. They are human beings. You know who else does? Officials. And I always want to keep that in mind. They're not perfect. You want them to be. We don't want robo-umps, right? Do we? We want the umpires, but no, the humans better be perfect when they get it right. It's just hard. It's hard. And I get when replay can correct mistakes. I'm okay with that. I want replay to be able to correct egregious mistakes, I guess, I think, because there's sometimes you're like, how did that happen? Oh, he didn't see that right on the sidelines. Clearly it was in. That impacts the play. But I mean, you just have to accept, I think, human element a lot in sports. You just have to. You accept it with your team, the opposing team. You accept it with the players. The players are human. They make mistakes. The coaches are human. They make mistakes. And I think a basic part of sports is referees, umpires, officials make mistakes too. I mean, they generally are really good at their job. They really are. I know. I know it's weird to say that, but they get way more calls right than wrong. But they are human. They make mistakes. This is not a mistake from last night, other than, I guess, blowing the whistle dead, thinking it was a dead ball. This was a rule last night that I did not like. It made for a more entertaining game. I mistakenly said to Jeremy this morning that they went for two and didn't get it, but they did get it, obviously, because this is the play they got it on. We were talking through the whole game. But the issue I have with last night was they allowed a play to happen after the whistle. I know that's the rule. I get it. They did nothing wrong with the rule. The rule was followed. The issue I have is with the rule. And I wish they'd revisit it, the NFL. You tell kids in every sport, you play to the whistle, and you don't play after the whistle. Playing after the whistle gets you a penalty. I mean, you can't tell an NFL football player, after the whistle, you can recover a fumble, but you can't hit a guy. I mean, I don't know. What happens if the ball is fumbled, there's a whistle blown, but somebody jacks somebody up to get to the ball? I don't know. Are you going to call a penalty because he hit him after the whistle? And they say, well, you can't do that. It's just weird to me. I don't like it. Bills-Browns series, memories after this timeout. We got some interesting ones. We're going to do that. We're going to get Sean McDermott, Bills head coach, to give us a final injury update as well as the Bills head to the Browns on Sunday in Cleveland, where there's been some memorable games as well. We'll do all of that in the next hour. Thanks for being with me, Sal Capaccio, here at Buffalo Football Friday on WGR.
Person that was in the league when I was younger said to me and to our staff years ago, hey, it's one thing to have a game plan, but it's another thing to have a staff that is able to adjust in the midst of a game, whether it is at halftime or, you know, second quarter, what have you. That's critical. But it takes two, right? It takes the staff to be able to know how to do that, but also then the players have to execute that, because you can have adjustments that the players aren't in a spot or space where they're able to adjust and execute those adjustments.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift. Literally. So unwrap something good. Like boots that inspire your next big adventure. Or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in. Or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you, so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you, and everyone on your list, at prices that get your budget. At DSW stores, or DSW.com.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Airo. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Airo uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Airo. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
And so that combination of buy-in from the players is huge for us.
All right, that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott from earlier this week. He's going to join me here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show during this hour, so be ready for that. We will have the Bills head coach give us a final Friday injury outlook for the Bills, what will happen today at practice, maybe injury designations. Oftentimes, we know who's declared out, who's questionable. We already know that kicker Matt Prater is out for this game. Defensive tackle Jordan Phillips is out for this game. We know the Bills have already signed Michael Badgley, a kicker, as a replacement to the practice squad. What about Mitch Wishnowsky, though, the punter? If Mitch Wishnowsky if his injury is going to impact his status for Sunday, the Bills would be down their kicker, their punter, and their holder. So the Bills will have to scramble with that. I mean, special teams, and they've been very good on special teams lately, and you know, this year as a whole, except for punt return numbers, are not great. They don't have a true punt returner. Khalil Shakir's been doing it. And I shouldn't say it like that, but he's a guy who's a wide receiver. He's a guy they put back there that they trust. But maybe they're getting Mecole Hardman back this week. We'll see. He's been on IR. He's on IR to return. We'll ask Sean McDermott about his status as well for Sunday, whether or not, you know, he expects him to be able to play, if there's a possibility he could play. But that being said, going back to what I was just talking about, if the Bills have to scramble on special teams, I mean, that's something they're going to have to be aware of, because that's how the Browns beat the Packers earlier this year. Go back and look at some of the big special teams plays. I think there were two block kicks in that game, block punt, block field goal, or block extra point, block field goal, either way. There were big special teams in that game. And there were big special teams plays in this previous game for the Bills against the Patriots. McDermott talking right there about adjustments. I love it, because the Bills have been great at these second half adjustments. Great. And if you want to spin it to, well, they have had bad starts and they're getting they have bad game plans, that's fine. I would argue that they're underhanded a bit on defense especially, so teams are coming out with a good game plan on how to attack them, and then the Bills have to figure it out on the fly. And they were able to do that last week. Remember, the Patriots had 2 weeks to prepare. I mean, heck, the Falcons did too. But, you know, it was just the luck of the draw this year at the schedule. Not an excuse. And the Bills did fall behind. You hope that they don't fall behind enough in a playoff game in a situation like that where they can't catch up. But they've been able to lately because, A, they've made great second-half adjustments and execution along with those adjustments. Credit to Sean McDermott. Credit to his defensive staff. And, B, Josh Allen either is Superman or running an offense that just stays calm enough to do everything they're supposed to do and march on. And that's what happened last week against the Patriots. And then you get Vrabel last week on Monday. Here's his team that couldn't make an adjustment at all to save their team and game in the second half. And he goes on the local radio the next day and starts whining about the Bills didn't get enough holding calls in the game. And I mentioned it on Monday. I called him a crybaby. And on Tuesday, our Odyssey sister station, WEEI, played that clip and kind of went after me a little bit, not viciously, but, and then basically said that one of the people there said that Sean McDermott blamed the AFC Championship loss on the Chiefs. I'm like, what? I mean, on the refs. Blamed it on the refs. When did that happen? I didn't see that. So anyway, I know there were questions about the fourth downs and spots and all that, but man, a little bit of coping going on in New England after last week. It's kind of a weird week. You know what? That's cool with fans, though, right? That's what you do. You get into it with fans and the media, and you're covering these teams, and you're watching the fans, and you're giving your takes on everything that's happening, and they go back and forth, and the radio host makes for entertainment. It's okay. But I just thought that was kind of bizarre last week. I really did. That's the route that Vrabel took. And a lot of you pointed out, he's probably softening up the officials in case they play again or down the road. Excuse me, softening up the officials in case they play the Bills in the playoffs again down the road. And this could very well be true, calculated. I'd also tell you, you could go the other way. There are officials who would say, yeah, you want to do that and call us out? Well, guess what? You ain't getting any more calls now. I'm being a little more strict. So anyway, that happened last week. Sean McDermott will join us here in just a little while in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Bills Browns. My first ever Bills road game. I was a 10th grader at my awesome alma mater, Cleveland Hill High School. Shout out to my Golden Eagles every time I can. And the Bills in 1989 go to the playoffs in the divisional round. They'd gone to the AFC Championship the year before. They lose to the Bengals. They go to the divisional round the next year, bickering Bills year. They go to Cleveland. My dad drives me and a couple of my friends to the game in Cleveland. Playoff game. I camped out for tickets, whatever. Some road tickets, you can do that back in the day. You had to go to the facility, camp out. There was banks that sold them. Not like today with online Ticketmaster and all that. My dad drives us to Cleveland. And I will say, as a few teenage boys, we were not treated very nicely by people in Cleveland that day. Now, they were rooting for their team. It was the dog pound. I get it. It was old Cleveland Stadium. And in this game, January 6th of 1990, 89 season, up until, and I hate to say this, the year the Bills lost with 13 seconds left to Kansas City, up until that game, this Bills-Browns playoff game in 89 was the best football game I had ever attended in person. It was incredible. In this game, Jim Kelly threw for 405 yards. Bernie Kosar threw for 251 and three touchdowns. Thurman Thomas, he only ran for 27, but he actually caught 150 yards in passes. Thurman was amazing. Okay. Andre Reed, 6 for 115. On the other side, Webster Slaughter, 3 for 114. You had Eric Metcalf returning a kickoff for the Cleveland Browns. 90 yards to put them up 10. Then the Bills come back with a field goal. Browns come back with a field goal. In this game, the Bills missed an extra point because Scott Norwood slipped. And because of that, they were down 4 at the end instead of 3. If he makes the extra point without slipping, they're down 3. They only need a field goal at the end of the game. They go to overtime. But because they needed 4 points, the Bills had to score a touchdown late in the game. And this is the game where Kelly throws to the back corner of the end zone. Ronnie Harmon short arms it, comes up short. They don't score. Call the drop pass. Next play, Clay Matthews steps in front of Thurman, intercepted. And on the way home, I just remember a bunch of Cleveland fans really being not nice to me and my friends who were teenagers at the time and saying some really cruel, awful things. And I really did not like Cleveland sports after that for quite a while. I always rooted against them. Don't get a championship before Buffalo. Can't have that. You're just like us, wallowing in tough losses, whether it's Jordan in the Cavs, the fumble, the drive, Elway. I was always, yep, that can't have Cleveland win. And then LeBron came along. And I think I loved what he did for Cleveland and their sports scene. And yeah, I'm a LeBron fan. And he left and then he came back. And I'm like, you know what? Give Cleveland a championship. I was okay with it. They won. I was happy for them. Don't have that jealousy and hatred anymore that I used to for our Our sister city by the lake, I guess you'd say. That was a great game, though. Maureen in Lancaster. Hi, Maureen.
Oh, hi, Phil. Excuse me. I haven't been talking much today, so I don't have my talking voice.
That's okay.
Yeah, I've been listening to you, and actually, since the Bills' victory in New England on Sunday, I've listened to a lot of the follow-up calls and stuff on that WEEI or whatever.
Yeah.
We really are in their head, and that Vrabel comment, when you mentioned that on Monday, I went back and listened to that whole conversation. He is really, I don't know how to explain it. I am so proud of our coach he never makes excuses for the team. You know, he takes, if it's a loss, it's a loss. He doesn't make excuses. He doesn't point to the other team as being the reason why we lost. And if anybody questions the connection Sean McDermott has with his players, all they need to do is to watch the celebrations in the locker room after a game, the connection the players have with him. There is a lot of love, and he does not get the credit throughout the league for being the kind of person and coach he is. You know, they're already touting who will be the next coach of the year, and Mike Vrabel, he's done this and done that. You know, who was the coach that brought the team back after they witnessed one of their own players literally dying on the field and continued that season? No, the season didn't turn out the way they wanted, but he had to keep that team together. There is very little recognition, I think, throughout the league with a person like Sean McDermott. He's such a solid human being who cares about his players, who celebrates when they need to celebrate, but he is just a very good human being. And I'm always appalled when people are saying, oh, fire him. That's ridiculous. He has built such a core of great men and treats them like men, and it celebrates with them. I don't mean to ramble, but sometimes I get so annoyed.
I can tell.
Hear all this crap on other...
Yeah.
We have one of the best guys, and there would never be a reason after what he and Bean have built. Yes, not everything is perfect. Not every team gets every call right, every draft choice right, but he doesn't kick people to the curb. He is a kind human being, and I love him.
Maureen, thanks for calling. It's been a while since I heard from you. Hope you have a happy holiday.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks for the phone call. Nice call there. I thought McDermott should have got a lot more love for the coach of the year that year, for what the Bills went through that year, for sure. But it goes without saying, yeah. I mean, you know, he's a very good football coach, and I've not heard him blaming officials for losses. And oh my God, there weren't enough holding calls. I mean, that was just ridiculous last week, what went on in WEEI. And but they played my comments, and then I had to deal with Patriots fans coming at me. But hey, that's just, it's the life we've chosen, as they say. We'll take a timeout. Sean McDermott on the other side. I'll get into more Bills Browns memories as we go on, as well as a look ahead to the Week 16 schedule. But Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me after this break here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday on WGR. Going through some Browns memories earlier, the 89 playoff game. Fantastic football game. Didn't work out for the Bills. My buddy Matt Perino, Syracuse.com, texted me his first memory. Bill's memory was BB getting bounced on his head. That was the same game. The officials blew that one, by the way. That should have been an interception on the Bills and Jim Kelly, because the ball never hit the ground. They called it an incomplete pass. Ball never hit the ground. Can't be an incomplete pass. And I guess, well, I have to go back and look at it. I guess he Would have been down by contact. I've looked now at the contact. BB on head. Let's see if I can find it again now. Is the play right here? Here it is. Hold on. Don BB going up. And, oh, he would have been down by contact. All right. Bam. Oh, did he maintain possession, though? So it's either down by contact or an interception. The ball never hits the ground. But there you go. That's one. If you want to talk about the worst games in Bills history, you might also come up with a Cleveland Browns game. Raise your hand if you reluctantly remember 6-3 in 2009 here in Buffalo. Yep. That happened. October 11, 2009. Dick Geron against Eric Mangini. Billy Cundiff, Ryan Lindell, Billy Cundiff. That was the scoring. 3 points, 3 points, 3 points. Starting quarterbacks in this game. Ladies and gentlemen, Derek Anderson, 2 of 17 for Cleveland, and they win the game. Trent Edwards, 16 of 31, 152 yards. The other quarterback was 2 of 17 for 23 yards, and that's the dude who won. That was 6-3. One of the worst games ever played. Bills history. There's been some... I mean, the Bills played a Monday night game. I don't know if you remember this one. The Bills played a Monday night game in 95. It was right after it was announced that the Browns were moving to Baltimore. And I remember this. And it was terrible in Cleveland. Like, that night, people came with signs, big time, like, disparaging things against Art Modell, their owner. I mean, they were obviously very upset. 95. It was just announced the Browns are going to move to Baltimore. Bills play a Monday night in October that week, and everybody knows that's it. They're not going to be in Cleveland anymore. This legacy team, they've been there a long time. And the Bills win that game in Baltimore. This was a game that Justin Armour caught a touchdown pass from Jim Kelly. So that was a memorable moment for something a little bit different than on the field and the scores. Then you had the Blizzard game. The Blizzard game in Cleveland. We talked about it earlier. 2007, Bills lose 8-0. Marjorie in Geneva has a Bills-Browns memory. Hi, Marjorie.
Hi there.
What do you got?
So I was a freshman in college, and I was going to college in Boston, and my dad wanted to take me to an away game that year. So we went to Bills-Browns. It was fall of 94. It was the year that the Browns was having all of the talk about moving. And so the fans were especially salty, upset, all this stuff. And my dad kept telling me, you know, don't wear your Bills anything, but of course I show up in my Jim Kelly jersey. We go to the game. It goes to the last second, and Steve Christie lines up for the game-winning field goal and misses it. But Cleveland had called the timeout. He gets to re-kick. It goes through. We get beer all spilled over us. We get back to the parking lot. The car is keyed.
Oh, no. This is the game. This is the game I just referenced. It was 95, and okay. Christie kicks 95. It with 8 seconds left in the game to win it. You're right.
Yep.
22-19.
Yes.
Yep.
And then the next morning, they go to drive me to the airport to catch the flight back to Boston, and we literally listened to the O.J. verdict on the radio before.
Wow. Really? That would have been the time. That's right. 95, October. Wow. Yep. Oh, my gosh. Wow. That's an amazing, amazing memory, Marjorie.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. Happy holidays to you. Let's go to Chris in Buffalo's got one. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Sal. How are you?
I'm good, bud.
Good to talk to you.
Yep.
My son, 9 years old, his first game was the 6-3 game, Cleveland in Buffalo. And, you know, no tailgating. We snuck in at the last minute. I had gotten tickets from a vendor for the Jim Kelly suite, so we were set up. And it was a miserable game. And at halftime, I was like, okay, Ben, let's go. He's like, but Dad, the game's not over. I was like, Ben, the game's over. Trust me. But we stayed to the bitter end, and it was worst experience ever, but... He's 25 now, and he's experiencing winning Bills, so good turn of story here.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, I was not living in Buffalo for that game at the time, but that 6-3 game, I know a lot of you bring up as just one to absolutely forget. All right, let's get to Bills head coach Sean McDermott right now, who joins me on the Nordtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to Buffalo Bills Football Friday on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Kia, West New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com. Now, here's Sal Capaccio with Buffalo Bills head coach, Sean McDermott.
Sean McDermott joins me on the West Her Hotline right now. Good morning, Coach. Happy Football Friday to you.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Sal, and everyone out there. Happy Football Friday as well.
All right, before we get into this game, we like to rewind a little bit sometimes and talk about last week. And I think obviously a big talking point was your comeback against the New England Patriots the second week in a row. And obviously a few times this has happened this year. How does halftime work for you guys? Can you kind of walk everybody through the process? Like, how do you get to make those adjustments? I mean, I even know I got to do a quick radio hit and there's not enough time for me to maybe get a sandwich in between halftime. There's not a lot of time. So how does it work for your coaches, your players to get together and make those adjustments?
Yeah, no, it goes a lot faster than when you're kind of at home, you know, taking a bathroom break, grabbing a turkey sandwich, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
It goes a lot faster when you're actually going through it. So you try and get a second or two to give the players a chance to catch their breath, meet with the training staff if they have anything going on. And then as a coaching staff, we meet, obviously offense meets with offense, defense, so on and so forth. And then you bring your ideas and adjustments to the players in the last, call it, minute. It's almost kind of in some ways like a pit stop, right, where you've got to get a lot of information and a lot of things done in a short amount of time, but it's got to be as efficient as possible.
And I know we've talked about this with Eric Wood in the broadcast a lot. As a former offensive lineman, he'll say, like, a lot of the adjustments are coming after each series, but you're just so much into the game, you can't kind of sit back and just kind of take stock of everything right away because everything's going so fast, right? So you're still making adjustments during the game. They might not necessarily work out, but you might have to kind of correct things as you go. How much of on the fly is happening and doing that from series to series as well?
No, that's exactly right. He was right. And you try and get that going as soon as you can. There's a lot of teams that even more and more now that are doing these scripted, you know, start of a game where they script out the first X amount of plays. And so some of those plays are new and they're game plan plays specific to your team. And so some of the adjustments are in reaction to those plays because you haven't seen them before. They've copycatted them from another opponent that you may have faced earlier in the year. So it's a big kind of wave coming at you early in the game that you have to respond to more than anything.
And then Josh said that one of the things that really helped them was that big kick return out of halftime. And that leads me where I want to go next. Ray Davis suddenly now leading the NFL in yards per kick return, over 32 yards a kick return. He has really found a nice role here. Chris Tabor has found a nice role. You guys have. Can you kind of just speak a little bit to what Ray has brought to the table in that particular role this year?
No, it's a good thing for us. You know, we were kind of struggling in the return game, both punt and kick return, and trying to find different personnel that could work in there. And now we've come across Ray, who's taken advantage of the opportunity. And Coach Tate and Coach West have done a really good job of scheming it up from a blocking standpoint. And then the other 10 guys out there with him have done a phenomenal job as well. And terms of creating some lanes for him. So Ray's done a great job, and it's good because, you know, that field position is huge for us.
And speaking of creating, Chris Tabor created something new last week. Reggie Gilliam is a lead blocker. Alec Anderson is a lead blocker. I spoke with Ray and with Reggie Gilliam about this, and they got smiles on their face about how cool it is to walk into a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday meeting, whatever it is, and Coach Tabor goes, here's what we're thinking about this week, and you can be really creative now. And how much does that kind of help those guys get a little bit more amped up and juiced up for that play?
Yeah, the more people you can involve, the better, right? Everyone gets a little bit of a piece of the game plan, and week to week you go into the meeting room and you're wondering, hey, am I the guy this week? How am I going to be used? So that's really been effective for us.
Sean McDermott on the West Her Hotline. All right, Coach, you talked about the return game. I'll ask you about Mecole Hardman to start. Is there a chance that he could wind up being active this week and where that's trending and how he's looked so far in practice?
Yeah, so he's practiced this week, first week opening his window, coming off of IR, and we'll see how it goes, today included, and then see how he feels tomorrow. So there's a chance. We'll see how it goes.
All right, let's talk about the other guys. You have a bit of a lengthy report after Thursday. Is there anybody you know will not play in addition to what you told us earlier this week with Matt Prater and Jordan Phillips?
Yeah, so those two, and then we'll add Chase Lunt to that, who's been primarily inactive for the games for the most part. And then Cam Lewis will not practice today. We'll see how he does the rest of the day today and tomorrow. Daquan Jones and Taron Johnson will be on a vet rest day and somewhat of an injury management situation that they have going on there.
Okay, and then obviously a couple guys showed up. Mitch Wisnowski's a guy, obviously you're already without your kicker. He's dealing with a right quad after a right knee, excuse me, after yesterday. He's not only the punter but also the holder. Where do you think things stand with him right now?
Yeah, he's nursing a little bit of a knee. We'll see how he does the rest of the day today and into tomorrow as well.
And then is Dalton Kincaid's knee injury a new injury or something you guys are managing through, and will he practice today?
Yeah, it's not a new injury. It's something we're managing. He's been managing pretty much all season and a little bit going back to last year as well. So we're trying to be smart with him as much as possible here.
Deion, okay, Coach? Is he feeling a little better?
He is. He's back in the building today. He's been out the last couple of days with an illness, so he looks better today.
And then finally, last one. Sorry, I know there's a lot of names here. Christian, how do you think Christian has gotten through the first few days this week after missing last week's game?
I think he's improved. He really has, and it's good to have him trending in the right direction. We'll see where it goes. Today he'll be full, and hopefully he can come out of today's practice not sore and ready for the game.
You look at the Cleveland Browns. Of course, Myles Garrett gets all the attention. We'll talk about him in a second. But overall, Coach, I mean, their numbers on defense are really, really good. What do you like about that side of the ball, independent even of their excellent pass rusher, of course?
No, they've got Myles Garrett. That's where everything starts, as we all know, up front, and your ability to, you know, establish the line of scrimmage, win the line of scrimmage, and then affect the quarterback and be disruptive. That's where it starts. And you know, we'll see if one of their corners plays, but you know, they've got a good yep. quarterback group that allows them to play man to man. That combined with their pass rush is really the kind of the core of where their defense begins. So. They've done a good job building it.
And, you know, Miles is so great at rushing the passer. We know that he's on, you know, he's getting close to the record, but boy, he's a great run defender too. Do you think that sometimes, I know it's great to get the highlight stats and the accolades when guys are great pass rushers, but sometimes maybe they don't get enough credit for how good of run defenders they are when they're that great at it?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That gets celebrated a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of numbers and whatnot, but in order to rush the passer, you got to be able to stop the run, and they've done a good job of that as well. Very twitchy, physical, sticky defense in terms of what they're able to do in the coverage end as well.
All right, and then on the offensive side, Junkins, a nice young running back, and yards after contact. How important will tackling be this week for you guys?
Yeah, that's huge. You said it. We've got to be able to establish a line of scrimmage, get to the football, and very rarely does he go down with a solo tackle, so we've got to make sure we can gang tackle.
And then finally, Coach, Shedeur Sanders, rookie quarterback. Obviously, you've seen some of him on film, some highlight plays. What do you see from the youngster in Cleveland?
Yeah, very talented player. Obviously, well decorated in terms of his career and what he did in college and even before that. So he's got that pedigree. You know, he's probably statistically improved their offense since he's been the starter the last three games or so. And so it'll be a challenge for us. And we're expecting some weather over there as well in terms of wind. So we'll have to manage that as well.
All right, Coach, listen, I will not speak to you here on the radio until after Christmas. So I hope you and your family have an amazing Christmas. Of course, good luck on Sunday in Cleveland.
Well, Merry Christmas to everyone out there, to you and your family as well, Sal, and happy holidays to everyone.
All right, you got it. That is Sean McDermott. Thanks a lot, Coach. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care. Thank you.
All right, you got it. Sean McDermott on the Wester Hotline. So good news, I think, that just the two guys we already knew are going to be out this week. Cam Lewis will not practice today, then they'll see. And then Daquan Jones, Taron Johnson managing some injuries, getting through that. They'll have vet rest days today, so we'll see where it all goes, folks. All right? We're going to get Pat Hammer here on the weather. Sean said we were expecting a little bit of weather. Ooh, what a nice little tee up for our guy Pat Hammer here, who's going to join us to tell us a little bit about what it's going to be like in Cleveland. It will not be like that 2007 game, folks, okay? I can promise you that blizzard game the Bills had in 2007. But let's get him to him right now, Patrick Hammer.
Break it down.
When you need to know what to wear, is it going to rain? Is it going to snow? What to prepare for? You're about to find out. Here's Sal Capaccio with your game day forecast with Channel 2 weatherman extraordinaire,
Here's Patrick.
Have a time.
Pat Hammer on the West Her Hotline. WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. Sean just teed you up. I don't know if you know that. He's kind of teed you up. I mean, I asked him about Shutter Sanders. Talks about the young rookie, and then he throws in. He goes, you know, it might be a little windy there, too, so we'll have to plan for that. So here you go, pal. That's your opening.
There we go. Well, I'll take it and run with it.
Yeah.
First of all, before we address the wind in Cleveland, if anybody's planning to go outside in the next 5 or 10 minutes, I was just broadcasting from our roof, Sal. The snow was sideways. The wind just gusted to 60 miles an hour. And all of this occurred kind of on live TV. It was kind of crazy. So the wind is kind of wicked out there. So drive safe. Also a flash freeze taking place. That's the rain we had overnight. It's freezing up rapidly. So parking lots, sidewalks, streets, they're going to get icy pretty quick. So just a heads up.
Okay. Yeah, it's been very icy out there a little bit lately. And that's something that we have to deal with, obviously, this time of year when the weather changes as rapidly and distinctly as it does sometimes. But what are we looking at in Cleveland for Sunday's game?
Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, we think about maybe these two cities being very similar, and they are, but they're on opposite sides of the lake. I know the lake effect kind of affects each city a little bit differently, doesn't it?
Right. Oh, it does. I mean, for instance, one little thing, the water level in Cleveland may be about 5 or 6 feet lower than it will be in Buffalo today, because the lake is doing that little, you know, slosh back and forth with these strong winds. So that's one thing. The wind, though, kind of doesn't bring a whole lot of lake effect snow to Cleveland. It does to areas just north and east. But yeah, the lake just does mercurial things to us and to them, but just in different ways. And the lake will help kick up the wind a little bit in Cleveland on Sunday. But Sal, it is going to be breezy.
Okay.
Certainly nothing like it is here right now.
What are we talking breezy? What are we looking at as far as game time temperatures and elements and through the game 1 to 4 o'clock?
You got it. Okay. So kickoff, I would say a temperature of about 29, 30 degrees. The windiest part of the game will be the first half versus the second. Now, that's kind of the trend we're seeing again in the afternoon, is a decrease in the winds. The winds to start the game.
So just in time for the Bills to have a huge comeback again, right, you're saying?
That's exactly how they planned it, right?
That's right, yeah.
The wind will be 10 to 20, gusting to maybe 25 or 30 miles an hour, okay? So, yeah, that's breezy. I don't know if that's downright windy, but that's a breeze.
Yeah.
The wind should relax a little, though, by the second half. So we've certainly seen windier games. Wind may play a little bit of a factor, but, you know, we're on the order of 20 to 25 miles an hour in gusts, maybe 30.
Okay. Temperature-wise, because the wind can obviously impact, you know, the real feel here, what are we looking at as far as the game is concerned?
Well, so yeah, the temperature is going to be around 29 to 30 degrees at kick. And then second half, we're going to be probably in the low to mid 20s. Now, that brings in a wind chill, but, you know, players, I don't think, care too much about wind chill with them all being padded up and whatnot. But yeah, the temperatures are going to be cold. For your knowledge, the wind chill will actually be in the teens, but it's going to be a cold day, and you on the sideline, Sal, you're going to notice it. I mean, it's a day for you to layer up and bundle up, because that wind will add a chill, certainly.
All right, I will bring the ski goggles, because it's the wind is what gets you with the ski. I have to wear them, because the wind gets in your eyes. You know what I mean? That's the thing about it. It's not the snow necessarily. Sometimes that happens.
Right.
Are we looking at any snow or precipitation in any form, though?
No, not at all. The skies will see a mix of clouds and sun. No rain or snow or sleet or whatever it was that just was blowing on the roof here.
And then a lot of people obviously will drive to the game from Buffalo, and that may happen tomorrow. That may happen Sunday morning. Is there anything to be aware of for anybody who's driving to Cleveland from Buffalo over the next, you know, 48 hours?
Yeah, I don't see any issues. You know, if you were leaving today for some reason, you had to get there early. Yes, you are going to have to navigate through snow, especially between, you know, let's say here in the Pennsylvania state line. But tomorrow there should be no issues whatsoever. And even on Sunday, you wouldn't leave Sunday. You'd be coming back Sunday. I don't even think there could be some snow showers for people returning Sunday afternoon. Monday should be fine. But for the travel down, there really is nothing to be worried about in terms of wind or snow. It's going to be a far quieter day tomorrow between here and there.
Patrick Hamer, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. What are we looking at next week here in Buffalo as we head into Christmas? Is there a chance for a white Christmas, and what's it looking like?
Okay, I do sometimes want to express my emotion.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to just give you the facts. But the truth is, it's going to be a brown Christmas. It's going to be a muddy Christmas. And okay. I'm kind of bummed out.
Yeah.
Because the first half of this month was, okay, if you're a fan of winter weather, you know, it wasn't your cup of tea. But it was such a great setup, right? We had a lot of cold, deep snow, not necessarily in Buffalo, but we had some deeper snow in the south towns and across the hills, of course. And a lot of that went away last night because of the rain. And even though we are going to get some snow today, it's not going to be much, you know, a coating to a half an inch in Buffalo, a few inches elsewhere. But the temperatures are going to be starting off the week kind of cool, but we're going to have a little rain and snow with 30s on Tuesday. And then Christmas Eve to Christmas Day, a chance of light rain with temperatures Christmas morning in the, you know, near 40, and then in the afternoon near 50. So, you know, it's going to be, it can get like that here. You know, we don't always get a white Christmas, you know, maybe 2 out of 3. This is not the year for it, unfortunately.
I have to tell you though, you've nailed every time going back to like, I don't know, November, I would say, what's December look like? And you nailed it. You said, let's start out warm. And then later you said, we're going to have a pretty good cool down and it's going to get cold and some weather elements in the middle, and then it's going to get a little warmer again. And you've been right about that. So I'll put you on the spot here about how we're looking maybe heading into the new year after that, or any indications at least.
I'm glad we got that one right. January is a tougher call. I'm going to be just honest with you. If you were to put, you know, if you wanted the Vegas odds on January, mm-hmm. it would be pick 'em, you know. Mm-hmm. There's some trends that are suggesting a deep return to winter. And then there are some suggestions given that January may turn out on the warmer side. I know. And you're like, well, that's how hard is
it? Way to play it there, weather guy. Way to hedge your bet, man.
I am not done. So I am putting all of my chips on red.
I love this.
And red happens to be cold, okay?
Okay.
Maybe I should have said I'll put all my chips on black. Let's do that. I'm putting all my chips on black, which means a trend towards colder and snowier weather. It may not be right at the new year, but maybe, you know, as we dive into January, it will trend that way. So,
hey, you've been bang on for what you've said. So We're gonna take that and say, okay, this is what Pat says. We're gonna be ready for it. A little bit of trivia about Cleveland and Buffalo too, by the way. We just talked about the lake and all that, and it's really interesting. I saw one time somewhere, and it's true. Buffalo is the only major city east of the Mississippi River that has a sunset mm-hmm. over a lake, over water.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
It's amazing.
You can sit on the shores of Lake Erie.
Yep.
And see the sun, you know, set over water, and that can't happen anywhere else. And as somebody who grew up on the West Coast and who's used to that kind of thing,
yeah,
it's kind of cool to have it here as well. But yeah, that is true. I mean, there might be some smaller cities on Lake Michigan, things like that. But even that, the lake isn't really wide enough for that to happen. So, or you know, the bottom line is, you're right. Buffalo is the only city that gets a West Coast style sunset, just in terms of geography. That's true.
Yeah, very. I mean, Cleveland, you could look a little west, and there's some water there, but it's not the same thing. You're not looking over the whole.
No, you got land that you're looking over
as well there.
Even just the other day, sometimes if you don't drive along the lake shore, you don't really realize it. Our winter sunsets can be amazing. Okay,
yeah, 100%.
You may not get the full glory of a sun setting like in the summer, but just the colors and everything else, it's really something. But yeah, it's an interesting little fact about our crazy lake.
You're an OG football fan. I say that with a lot of respect. You know, you and I, we're both older guys now. We think about football.
Yeah.
Cleveland Browns players, they go back a long time. Any Cleveland Browns memories? Who do you remember from the Browns?
Well, so growing up, there wasn't a ton of history between them and the 49ers, even though I grew up in San Francisco, so I was a 49er fan. I'm going to be honest. They're one of the teams that I just don't have a big connection with.
Okay.
Despite, you know, I think I told you my grandfather was a football player.
Yeah.
Briefly in the early 40s. But even then, I don't have much. I do know some of the Buffalo Bills history there. What was that crazy game? 8-0 or something? I think
8-0, 2007, 2007, the Blizzard game. Right. That's yeah. I mean, you and I, Jim Brown was before us, right? I mean, Jim Brown, one of the greatest players ever. He's a little before us, right? But I mean, like, remember, I don't know if you remember, the coach I first remember was Sam Rotigliano, good Italian guy, right? Sam Rotigliano.
Okay, right.
He was the first head coach. And then Brian Sipe was the first quarterback I remember. And then they had Bernie Kosar, obviously, for a while. I mean, they had some,
sure.
You know, they Ernest Biner and Kevin Byers, now I can't think of the other guy's name. Anyway, they had some really terrific players. Webster Slaughter. I went to that 89 playoff game, which was epic between the Bills and Browns, and the Bills lost that one.
Okay, if I ever have a kid who's going to become a football player, his name will be Webster Slaughter.
I love it.
Probably the best name. It's the best. It is the best. I will change my last name so my son can have it.
All right, buddy. Listen, have a great – I'm not going to talk to you until after Christmas, so – have a great Christmas. And just listen, thank you for all that you do. I know every week you come on this radio station. You don't have to do that. We ask you, and we've been doing it for years. And I'm telling you, it's a must-listen segment. I hear from people all the time. They can't wait to get their weather report from you. So I just want to tell you, honestly, we just appreciate it so much from all of us here at Odyssey and me personally.
Hey, I love doing it. I'm glad to be a part of it. And Merry Christmas to you. And everyone, be careful on the ice today. Just a heads up.
You got it, buddy. Thanks a lot, Pat. Have a great week.
Merry Christmas. Weekend.
Bye. Pat Hamer, we'll take a time out. We'll come back. We'll wrap up your Northtown Automotive Extra Point show on a Buffalo Football Friday. All right. Such a good show today. We didn't have time to go through the entire NFL schedule. I will tell you, though, tomorrow, games on the docket. Eagles at Commanders at 5 p.m. That's the same time the Sabres play the Islanders, by the way, here in Buffalo. And then at night, how about this? Packers-Bears tomorrow night. Great 8:20 p.m. start for some football on a Saturday. Bills-Browns Sunday. All day coverage for you here on WGR Sports Radio 550, as well as Sabres-Islanders tomorrow at 5. Sabres-Devils Sunday at 7. Big sports weekend on tap here in Buffalo. We got you covered all weekend long on WGR Sports Radio 550, the Bills Radio Network, the Sabres Radio Network. Thanks a lot for coming aboard today on a Buffalo Football Friday. Thanks a lot to Dan Dale for producing. Have a great weekend. Talk to you on Monday, everybody. Sabres Live up next.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/arrow. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit DetectTheSOS.com to learn more.